Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, a Canadian Olympian on the joy of getting faster.
I look forward to challenging myself on a weekly basis and, you know, seeing how I can progress and watching that progression, you know, through the course of a marathon buildup and see how, you know, maybe 3:10 per K felt really hard at the beginning, and then after, you know, it feels, you know, 3:10 per K feels like it's, you know, like I can run fairly relaxed and do it. I like seeing that kind of progress and throughout that marathon buildup.
Looking back on a historic performance in Boston.
So Boston is yeah, without a doubt, definitely the highlight of the year, and, you know, could be the highlight of my career for all I know.
And remembering the Marathon of Hope 38 years later.
I was lucky enough to spend 3 months in a very stinky Ford van back in 1980, and lucky enough to reflect and reminisce on the memories of what it was like to be the third member of the Marathon of Hope and to witness what I think was a miracle, watching Terry embark and run 42 kilometers every day.
On this edition of iRun Radio, Terry Fox's brother, Daryl Fox, and we'll talk to Canadian Olympians Reid Coolset and Krista Duchesne. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Have you been doing lots of running over the holidays?
Well, you know, I kind of slacked a little bit, but I'm happy to report that I'm back at it. I slacked just enough to reignite that craving, you know? You kind of need that craving to get out in the cold late at night and run hills as fast as you can and all of that. But I am there, baby. I am back.
Yeah. Well, you did text me. Was it on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve? I can't remember which, but you texted me and said, I'm just about to go out for a run. So
that's,
I thought,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to run on the last day of the year and the first day of the new year. It's a good way to finish the year, a good way to start the next one, you know?
It really is. And sometimes I qualify things like this, too. It's like, I'm not sure, you know, so many things are vague, you know? Like, what did you do? How did I do? How am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, what does it all mean? You know, what's this existence on Earth all about?
Oh, boy.
You could say, well, you know, here's one thing I know for sure. I ran on the last day of the year and the first day of the year, and that's something.
Yeah. And you're getting very existential here, of course.
Well,
I'm not sure we're going to be able to answer all of those questions on a running show and podcast, but they are the kinds of things you contemplate when you're out running, especially when it's the beginning of a new year, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. It's a good thing. It's a tangible net positive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes we get hung up in, okay, what kind of run did I run fast enough? Was my, you know, the number of minutes per kilometer, was that appropriate? Was, you know, did I run far enough? All of that. And I think this is an important time for all of us as runners to take a step back and say, look, just the fact that we're running, just the fact that we're moving at all is a positive thing. Whether you go 5 minutes a kilometer or 4.5 or 5.5 or 6 or whatever, you know, that's just, those are little nuances. The fact that you're out there and you're moving is the most important thing. That's the healthiest part of it. The difference between running and not running is so much greater than the difference between running and running a little bit better, or running a little bit further, or running a little bit faster.
Amen. You know, and if you can keep track on that, I mean, it's the whole thing is all about feeling good about yourself, right? And just feeling good in general. So you've got more energy and more positivity to share. And so it's been, I've been enjoying it and I'm looking forward to it. And it's funny how we are, because I vouched, you know, I think I even, oh, that was probably my last marathon, and there's no way I'm doing the Chili Half again, and this, that, and the other, and all of these grand proclamations that I said at the end of the season. And, you know, fast forward, I don't know, 3.5 weeks, and I'm doing all of the same things again, and I can't wait, you know? And it's just, you know, you just take a breath, and God willing, life is long, and you get to reevaluate and reaffirm your love.
Are you a New Year's resolution kind of guy?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was really trying with my kids as well. Some of the resolutions, it's like, I want to change this about me, and I want to change that about me. So I try to temper those with, like, well, what do you like about yourself, too? What's working?
Good for you.
It's not all just like, I want to be more patient. I want to eat less tacos. I want to whatever, you know? So it's like, you know, you're doing great. But, yeah, I mean, I have some. Obviously, I'd like to be more patient, pay more attention to details and things, and it sure would be nice to break 3 hours at the Ottawa Marathon. But it's always funny when you talk about resolutions and, you know, you slip that last one in where, you know, you have these big things. I'm going to volunteer more to charities and, you know, help humankind. And then, like, resolution number four is break 3 hours at the Ottawa Marathon. And my wife kind of rolls her eyes. I slipped that one in.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, well, yeah. You got to have goals, right? It's very important, and for every goal you have to have a plan, or it's not going to happen. So that's one of the things that marathon running and running in general has taught me is that you know, you can achieve great things. You have to go about it incrementally. You're not going to get there overnight. It takes time. You have to be patient,
right.
And you need a plan to get there. You don't just decide to run a marathon and go out and do it next week. You set up a plan. You start running a little further every week, and you improve yourself. And before you know it, you've traveled a long way, and you can look back and be proud of what you've done.
And the secret is enjoying the process. I mean, because the thing is, if I want to say my goal is to break 3 hours at the Ottawa Marathon, let's just take that as a hypothetical. But the idea is, if I enjoy the process and I do some races with my buddy and you and I go on some runs and I, you know, I go to Hamilton for the 125th around the bay and we do a party after and all that, and I, you know, it basically gets me through the winter and takes me through the spring and all of that, and then I get 3:22 in Ottawa. But if I enjoy the process,
yeah,
you know, so what about the end goal? And
absolutely.
I've done a marathon, yeah. So if you keep that in mind and just don't get too hung up.
Very true.
Die. I mean, we're not going for the gold. You know?
Yeah. All right, good stuff, Ben. Well, I hope all of your hypothetical goals are achieved in 2019. All the best to you this year. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, my friend.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, Canadian Olympian Reid Coolset. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reid Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Reid Coolset ran the marathon for Canada at both the 2012 and 2016 Olympics. Reid, welcome to iRun Radio.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So tell me a little bit about what you've done differently and what you've learned along the way, because obviously you've been doing this for a long time. Marathons are not new for you, but if you're doing better at this stage, you must be doing something different. And I think we all know, and we've all heard it said before, that you know, marathons are, there is a learning curve to marathons, and you do have to run a few before you really start to understand what it takes to get faster, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, marathon, it's so much different than, you know, 10K and a half marathon, in the way you train and in, just on race day and the things you have to deal with, on race day, you know, as far as fueling and just the pure exhaustion and your legs feeling like, you know, giving out from underneath you, like feelings and stuff that I don't get in the half marathon at 10K. Those hurt in their own right, but they're quite different. And, you know, as far as training over the years, I have found what works for me, but I also haven't just stuck to that same plan. I think as you keep doing certain workouts, you don't get the same bang for your buck as you used to. And so it's important to add new things, whether that's, you know, running longer or doing faster intervals, or, you know, in 2015, one of the things I added was speed pills. So I started, you know, maybe only two or three times in a whole marathon buildup. So every three or four weeks, I'll go to a really steep hill and do 10K up and down. And that's kind of like, you know, my I'd say like my weight room kind of stuff. But, you know, it challenges me in a different way. And I think bringing, you know, a new stimulus to your training will help you make improvements, even, you know, as you age and as you get used to, you know, the bread and butter workouts that you've been doing for years.
Yeah, and it, you learn what works and what doesn't, and you apply that to the next race. But it's a complicated mix, isn't it? There's so many variables. It's hard to control every one of them, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I've noticed as I've aged, my leg speed just doesn't come around as quickly. I used to be able to just touch on it every once in a while, and I seemed good to be good to go for the marathon. Whereas now I really have to focus on you know, that 5K and 10K type training, and try to bring that into my marathon training, just so it's still there. Whereas before, maybe because I had done so many track seasons back to back to back, and I was younger, I kind of just took it for granted that I could go out and, you know, do 10 times a K, you know, much quicker than my marathon goal pace. And now just to get that, you know, 10 or 15 seconds faster than marathon goal pace is quite a chore.
So let's talk for a moment about what you've learned along the way running these marathons, because there are some great tips in the latest issue of iRun from you and from some other elite runners. And I know that runners are always looking for advice, and they turn to people like you who have so much experience and have had so much success. So tell me a little bit about what you've picked up along the way.
Well, I mean, as far as fueling goes, one of the biggest things is to practice. You know, I wasn't good right off the bat. Some people, their stomachs are just, they're great. You know, they can put whatever, you know, they want in the stomach and they don't have any problems. Whereas my stomach would get a bit upset. So, but over time I learned kind of what drinks work better for me, and, you know, taking smaller sips and carrying that water bottle a little bit longer, than I normally would. Right now Endurance Tap, seems to be my best gel, and Morton for a sports drink has been working well. And yeah, practicing, just, it goes a long way. As far as the mental side of a marathon too, I mean, that's something that really does, you know, take a lot of, you know, I guess practice as well. And the more marathons you run, the more kind of ups and downs you go through, and you kind of learn how to, you know, focus better and push through certain pain better and discomfort. And I mean, I remember the last good marathon that I ran, like as far as time wise, was in 2016 in December there. And I ran that race, pretty much alone. I didn't go with the pacers, and, I had never been so focused in my life. So it was something that, you know, after, you know, 10 plus marathons, actually probably my 10th marathon then, I was just able to get into a zone that I hadn't been able to get into before, and push myself without having the competition like right there beside me, or, you know, right behind pacers. So yeah, little things like that, you know, experience helps. And, you know, if you kind of, you know, finish the marathon and dissect it a little and kind of remember like certain cues, then and you have those in your back pocket for next time.
Yeah, and tell me more, because in the issue of iRun, you talk about how you maintain your pace late in the race, which is one of the big challenges of the marathon. It gets harder the further into it you are, especially if you're running close to your kind of red line, your maximum ability. The later you get in the race, the tougher it is, and you have to kind of overcome that. So what are some of the things you do to be able to overcome that and keep your pace?
Yeah, I mean, that's of course like the hardest thing in the marathon is just to maintain your pace. You know, anybody can start off at a, you know, a pretty good clip, and then, you know, it depends how far you can go. I mean, for me, a lot of the times it's kind of digging in to my motivation and what I want to get out of the race. So, you know, kind of getting into that, you know, cause I guess like the things that really matter. So, you know, whether it's a qualification time or, you know, just running a personal best, you know, being competitive in a race and wanting to beat certain people or, you know, finish high up that I can, and, you know, in the top 10 or something like that. You know, those are the things I have to remind myself, you know, why I've trained so long, why I've trained so hard for it, and, that I, you know, I got to get everything I can out of my body on the day to, you know, make all that training worth it. And sometimes it's actually shutting off the brain. So if I can shut off my brain and maintain pace in a marathon, that's the best thing, because then you're not wasting any extra energy, overthinking things. And it's, you know, you just kind of get into the zone, and that's usually when I'm can follow, you know, other runners that are running the same pace as me. And the longer I can do that into the race, then usually the fresher my mind is towards the end when it's going to really count. And that's when I start, you know, thinking about what matters, thinking about, you know, how my body's moving, thinking about quick steps. You know, I want to keep the same, you know, leg turnover as I was doing at the first part of the marathon, and, you know, making sure I'm not slouched over, you know, make sure they get the form still intact.
Those are all great tips, and so much of it is mental, because you have so much time to think when you're running a marathon. Tell me about, you know, at the this is competitive for you. You have specific goals. This is effectively your full-time occupation and preoccupation. Do you still get joy from running, whether it's racing or training?
Oh yeah, for sure. I don't think you know I could do well and it just be a job. Like if it was just kind of, you know, trying to run 200 kilometers in a week and I didn't enjoy it, I don't think I'd get that much out of it. And I think my body would probably break down. You know, you have to really love what you're doing in order to do it to a, you know, almost like an extreme level. I enjoy going running, and if I wasn't training for a marathon, I would still be trying to run every day, and you know, it would look much different. And I enjoy the challenge of it too. So, you know, doing two, you know, fast workouts every week, and I look forward to those, and I look forward to challenging myself on a weekly basis, and you know, seeing how I can progress and watching that progression, you know, through the course of a marathon build up, and see how, you know, maybe 3:10 per K felt really hard at the beginning, and then after, you know, it feels, you know, 3:10 per K feels like it's you know, like I can run fairly relaxed and do it. I like seeing that kind of the progress and throughout a marathon build up.
So, Reid, I wanted to talk about the cover photo of the latest issue of iRun, because I think it's a terrific photo. It's got a real timeless quality to it. It's a black and white photo. I encourage people to check it out on our website at iRun.ca. Maybe tell us a little bit about the process of taking this photo that ended up on the cover of the magazine.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was really happy with how that turned out for a couple of reasons. So, Nick, the photographer, came with me on run, and he was just gonna, like, you know, snap some pics to go along with the article and kind of figure out what we wanted to do for the cover shot. And so I just did my normal run. I think he came for two runs, and I probably ran about 22 to 25 K in the morning. Just kind of did my normal route, and you know, in the middle of the run a couple times, he just said, okay, stop here, we'll take a picture. You know, lighting's good, or like the background's good, or whatnot. And he did a little bit of video, and you know, took some pictures, and got back to my house, sat on my porch like an old dude. You're just kind of snapping pictures of a normal run. And we had another date booked to do the cover shot, and that was going to be, you know, typical perfect lighting with, you know, a backdrop and all that kind of stuff, and you know, different new bounce kits, try things out, and then. Ben sent me a couple of pictures from the run, just in the middle of the run. And he's like, yeah, I think we're going to go with this one for the cover shot. And I thought, like, one, it looked great. And two, that's awesome that I don't have to do this, you know, kind of like sit around and try to pose and think too much of it. You know, the shot that got taken was really just on a run, and I didn't really think much of it. And, didn't think it was going to be a cover shot, so it was just kind of relaxed and easy to do.
Wow.
I liked the process of it, and of course it turned out really well.
Yeah, it turned out great. Very cool. Well, Reid, thank you so much for your time and your advice. I know, as I said, lots of runners really love hearing tips from an elite runner like you, an Olympian. Thanks for being on the show.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Canadian Olympian Reid Coolset. Coming up next, Chris de Duchesne looks back on a historic race in Boston. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reid Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa, and you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at irun.ca. Just click on radio. It's great to welcome back to iRun Radio Canadian Olympian, elite marathoner, and running mom, Chris de Duchesne. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
So obviously, when you look back on 2018, I'm going to take a huge guess here and say one of the highlights, if not the highlight of the year for you, was Boston, where you finished third. So is that the case?
Yes, definitely. When I was thinking about having this conversation and looking back at the year, I was going to, you know, review my blogs and that kind of thing. And I thought, well, the things I remember are probably the most significant. So Boston is, yeah, without a doubt, definitely the highlight of the year and, you know, could be the highlight of my career for all I know.
Well, and that wouldn't be such a bad thing. So when you look back on that, now some time has passed. It's been 6 or 7 months since that crazy day in Boston where the weather was not cooperative, but maybe it was the right conditions for a Canadian to get to the podium. What are some of your lasting memories and enduring thoughts from that day?
I think I just enjoyed the experience even before I got there in the training. And, you know, even thinking about going and getting ready for the next marathon is exciting. So I think I look back and I know that that's the funnest experience I've had training for any marathon. I wasn't focused on my watch and times. I was focused on being strong in the hills and using the Around the Bay race to prepare for Boston. So it really just came together perfectly, especially with the way Dave had my workouts planned. And, you know, it was fun and rewarding, and you often don't get the two things at the same time.
Yeah. And I get the sense that you're in a different headspace now with regard to your competitions and your long-term goals and that kind of thing, that since you've had these Olympic experiences, that your outlook is a little bit different. Is that the case?
Yes, I think that, you know, probably anyone that makes it to the Olympics knows that that's a pretty significant life event. And whether it happens or not again, I'll give it a shot to go for the next Olympics in Tokyo, but I'm not going to chase that standard, you know, marathon after marathon. If it happens, great, I'll be thrilled. But I know that Canadian distance running is really strong for women. So if three women go and I'm not one, that means that, you know, we filled the three spots, and that would be amazing. But, you know, with the kids getting older, I'm coaching my daughter's hockey team. After the Olympics, it was about taking risk again and, you know, going skiing with my kids, even though I might get injured, and taking risks so that I don't look back and think, oh, I wish I did more with my family.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way of putting it, because there are so many things that you have to subordinate to your running when you are singular in your purpose and you've got this one goal, right? And I think even amateur runners can relate to it on a certain level. In fact, Ben Kaplan and I were chatting recently about how when he was training for a particular marathon, he didn't go skiing because he was worried about getting injured. Now he's not so worried about that. So even the amateur runner who's trying to do a PB in a particular race might, their diet, some other things might become big priorities for them. And it's kind of that multiplied by a factor of 10 if you are an elite athlete training for a goal like making the Olympics.
Right. I think that we can all relate to each other in terms of we know what we invest when it comes to a marathon. You know, we're out there grinding a lot of kilometers and going to bed early, but yet I think we can all admit that we love that. We love kind of being, you know, nerdy with our numbers and, you know, thinking before we go to bed, oh, how many kilometers am I going to run tomorrow, and going to bed early so that you can get up early. We kind of have that special bond. So, yeah, it's kind of neat to look at it in that sense.
Yeah, and it's a sense of purpose too, isn't it, when you're training for something like that?
For sure, you invest a lot in it. And, you know, when I take a look at this year financially, this was a great year for me. And it's rewarding in the sense that I can actually say that, you know, I made a decent income this year with how things worked out, but that was a long time in the making. You know, my first marathon was 16 years ago, and, you know, I decreased my hours as a dietitian. We had our three kids, and, you know, finally it kind of paid off. Yet I'm also realistic to know that, you know, I likely will never make, you know, the amount of money I did this year. But the process and setting the goals, that's something that we all share, and that's something that I will continue to enjoy no matter what those goals are.
Now, you mentioned Canadian long distance running and the state of the sport today at the elite level. Obviously, it's in a different place from where it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago. We are expecting regularly now to send marathon runners to the Olympics is one example where we had a bit of a hiatus from doing that for some time. How would you describe where the sport is at today?
You know, it's really exciting, and I must say that I'm at a pretty sweet spot. You know, we've talked about how my focus has shifted, and if I, you know, go for the standard and it works, great. But how exciting in that, you know, when Lanny and I both made it to Rio, that was the first time that Canada had sent a woman and two to the Olympics in 20 years. So there weren't many people for us to look up to that we were competing against. And now, you know, here I will be competing against people that, you know, I guess looked up to Lanny and I, and that we kind of broke that drought and, you know, represented Canada. And, you know, I just tweeted the other day and put on social media with the new standards being out for the World Championships that one man, Cameron Levins, and six women so far have the standard to run at the World Championships in Doha in 2019. And that's just incredible. So it's, yeah, it's an honor. It's exciting. And, you know, it's great for women in sport. I think now that I'm coaching my daughter's team, it's about character development. Obviously, they need to learn the game of hockey, but like being a role model for them, because we know that girls can drop out of sports sooner than boys. And when they look at, you know, distance running in Canada for women, how it's grown, that's, you know, I hope and I think it's inspiring and exciting for moms and for young girls and, you know, everyone in between.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think you raise a great point that for a lot of kids and younger athletes, they need to see somebody else doing it to imagine it for themselves. And so we can only imagine now what a new generation of Canadians has been inspired, how big that new generation is of Canadians who have been inspired by you and Lanny Marchand and Reid Coolset and Eric Gillis and Dylan Weikes and the other Canadian Olympians. It really speaks to the prospect of there being a lot more younger runners out there because they've seen those moments on TV, right?
Right. It's really exciting. And, you know, the other thing, too, is balancing life outside of running and having other things that we do. I don't necessarily think it's a great idea for people to put, you know, all their eggs in one basket, so to speak, and just focus on, you know, being a professional athlete. That's great. But, you know, balancing a family, having a career, you know, contributing to community work, those are all great things that can give you a focus outside of, you know, being a professional athlete.
All right. And as you look ahead to 2019, what are you thinking about? What are your goals? And have you started to figure out where you're going to run?
Well, I do know which spring marathon I'm doing. I can't yet say, but I think that everyone, well, I'll be pleased to go to this place, let's just say.
Okay, sounds good. We'll stay tuned on that.
Yes, yes. But as for 2019, I'm really looking forward to, it's what I'm calling my spring surprise. So basically after my spring marathon, I'll kind of do the typical local races that I do, the Robbie Burns 8K. I just did the Tannenbaum 10K, the Chili Half, and then around the Bay. But after my spring marathon, I'm basically giving it over to Dave Scott Thomas, my coach with Speed River, and saying, you tell me what to do. The qualification system for the 2020 Olympics is going to be different. So I think I'm excited that, you know, he will probably tell me what he thinks the best fall marathon will be. Or if I do world championships, I do have the standard, but I'm right now like sixth on the list. So three other people would have to say no, plus others could qualify. But I know I need to work on speed. You know, I'll be 42 in January, and I think I just have to kind of be a little bit more deliberate about putting a focus there. So he's got a great group of women that I can train with, Jen Lon, who just won National Cross, and then Rachel Hanna, who's in Guelph, and also with Speed River. So I'm excited to change things up in the spring and just kind of go into it open-minded and seeing what I can do.
Well, Krista, it's always great to talk to you, and I congratulate you on a terrific 2018. That was such a great moment in Boston, and I wish you the best of luck as you prepare for 2019, and we look forward to hearing more about what your plans are. Thank you for being on the show today.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Mark.
That's Canadian Olympian Krista Duchesne. Coming up next, Terry Fox's brother remembers the Marathon of Hope. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Every year, thousands of runners participate in the annual Terry Fox Run. It's one of the most inspiring days of the year. And just before the most recent edition, we spoke to Terry Fox's brother, Daryl Fox.
Daryl, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, good day, Mark. Good to chat with you again.
Yeah, great to talk to you again. And let's go back to 1980. You were there with Terry for a big chunk of the summer during the Marathon of Hope. What are the memories that come to mind in the summer for you as you relive some of those moments?
Well, they are a plenty, Mark. Even though we are 38 years removed from the Marathon of Hope, it to me sometimes it feels like yesterday, especially at this time of the year as we are about to celebrate another Terry Fox run. I was lucky enough to spend 3 months in a very stinky Ford van back in 1980, and lucky enough to reflect and reminisce on the memories of what it was like to be the third member of the Marathon of Hope and to witness what I think was a miracle, watching Terry embark and run 42 kilometers every day during the summer of 1980. So, I don't live in history, but I like to go back there and reflect and share stories of what it was like to participate in the Marathon of Hope.
And can you describe just how tough that was for Terry? Because the Canadian Museum of History did a great exhibit on Terry a couple of years ago, and I think it really allowed people to see up close the clothes that he wore, the artificial leg that he ran on, his running shoes. And it's worth pointing out, especially for people who run today or who have runners in their lives, the shoes were a lot different then. And Terry basically wore the same pair of shoes for a huge chunk of this, just kind of resurfacing the bottom of his shoes with that kind of glue that he used.
Shoe goo,
yeah.
It was shoe goo, yes.
Yeah.
And it still exists, actually, that product.
Yeah, wow. So it wasn't the modern shoe with the cushioning, and
no.
It wasn't even a modern prosthetic leg.
No, it looks like you look at the shoes back then, Mark, and they were like slippers, really. You had no support, nothing in the soles, and that's why we used the shoe goo to try and make them last more than 2 weeks. That's basically how quickly Terry went through his left shoe, which was his good leg. Every 2 weeks we would have to change it, even with the added shoe goo. Yeah, like night and day differences in terms of technology and what Terry would run on today, not only his shoe, but his artificial leg as well. It's you know, the leg that Terry ran on was a walking leg, prehistoric by today's standards. If he had today's technology, he would run just like you and I, Mark. So he would have covered more ground than he did in 1980, and it would have been a lot more comfortable and less painful for him to run if he were running today. You mentioned also the exhibit where, you know, the exhibit from 3 years ago, actually, as we celebrate the 35th anniversary. That exhibit, the Terry Fox exhibit, was so popular that it continues to tour, and right now it's in Edmonton at TELUS World of Science, and heading to BC in an exploration place in Prince George next month as well. So lots of ongoing work when you live in the legacy of Terry Fox.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, it never occurred to me before, but if Terry's artificial leg had been more modern, like the kind that that runners use today, runners who have lost a leg, then we might never have seen that shuffle that was so specific to the Terry Fox run, right, to the Marathon of Hope, that kind of skipping motion that he made to take two steps with his human leg for every step he took with his artificial leg.
Very good point. And, you know, it's interesting because that gate and the sound of that gate is what greets you when you enter the Terry Fox exhibit. And it's, you know, it's ingrained in my mind, in my memory, that extra hop that Terry had to take on his good leg to allow his artificial leg to swing through. It wouldn't be the case if he was on today's technology.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Terry Fox run coming up this Sunday. And
is it this Sunday?
Yeah.
I'm sure. Always the last to know. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. You should probably go to one of those sometime.
Yeah.
You should check it out. It's a good thing.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. So what has that come to mean? And one of the things we were talking about this before, but, you know, It's so powerful to me how many young people embrace this event and the story of Terry Fox, because that's not a guarantee. When time passes, sometimes a story fades, and this one has not.
Yes, and that's, I think, a very important reason why we are still, you know, we're still out there, and, you know, the story still resonates, is because the story has been passed on to the next generation. And not only has it been passed on, but it's been embraced, you know, to recognize that there'll be over 8,000, I think closer to 8,500 schools across the country that will host their own Terry Fox run or event this year is really incredible. So teachers, educators recognize the not only the need to raise money for cancer research, but what this story offers to their children and their students. And that's, you know, what all of us as family members enjoy so much, is that opportunity to attend many of those schools and see many of those events and see the children and how excited they are to hear about Terry. You know, to them, they know that Terry is no longer with us, but to them, it's not 38 years. It could have been last week, last month. And that is really something that would make Terry very proud to know that the baton's been passed on to them, and they will be the future organizers and researchers going forward.
Yeah, and that speaks to the incredible work that has been funded by the Terry Fox Foundation over so many years. And it's really powerful to see, for example, as I have seen at the event here in Ottawa, people who had the same cancer as Terry did, who have been effectively cured of that cancer because in part the research that's been done and funded by the Terry Fox Foundation, by all the money that's been raised at the Terry Fox Run and at other events throughout the year.
Yes, and you know, you mentioned Ottawa, and I know someone personally in Ottawa, first name Todd, who had the same form of cancer that Terry had, osteosarcoma, and is alive today. And you know, I can't change how history has changed the impact cancer has had on my life, but to know that Todd is still around because of the investment we've made makes all the difference in the world.
And what does it mean to you and members of your family when you go to a Terry Fox run and you see people running and wearing T-shirts with Terry's image on them and raising money and just carrying on this incredible legacy that he started with that initial goal of wanting a dollar for every Canadian which at the time would have been in the range of $20 million, and knowing that it's many, many multiples of that?
Well, it's every day's a proud day to be able to see the legacy. I think I appreciate it more now that I'm a little bit more dated. I can appreciate and understand that things over time tend to fade away, and this is something that hasn't. And so I'm more thankful for that Canadians remember Terry and are carrying the torch and have picked up that baton. That's something that I recognize, and more so than, I mean, it's not that I didn't appreciate it 20 years ago, but I have, again, with age and maybe a little bit more wisdom, I'm more thankful and understanding of just how Canadians have picked up where Terry left off in Thunder Bay, and I know how much that would mean to him, so that's why it really means so much to us as family members to be able to witness that legacy continue to grow 38 years later.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is incredible is just how much other fundraising and other purpose-oriented running it has inspired, right? It's not just, I mean, obviously, There is the huge amount of money that's been raised for the Terry Fox Foundation, but just the idea within Canada of, you know, I'm gonna run and I'm gonna raise money for something that's important to me. A lot of that was inspired by Terry Fox.
Yes, and you know, that's I'm not exaggerating if when I say that it's a week doesn't go by when we don't receive word of someone who is planning a venture or an activity, and they were inspired by Terry.
Yeah.
You know, they might have chosen a different cause, and that's wonderful and great. It's about finding out what your purpose in life is and devoting time and energy to that. So that's also an amazing component of how Terry has passed that to others so many years later.
Terry's birthday was July the 28th, and he would be 60 this year. I think for a lot of Canadians, he has such a youthful image. They think of him from the summer of 1980. It's almost hard to picture him as a 60-year-old, isn't it?
It is, and I don't have that vision. You know, I still see him as, you know, 22 years old, running the Marathon of Hope. And what's interesting about Terry's image is that it's never dated.
Yeah.
His appearance, with the exception of the short shorts, we can't get around that. The short shorts were part of the time, and I'm embarrassed whenever there's photos of moi beside Terry wearing them as well. But they do come up from time to time. But otherwise, his appearance, his curly hair, I mean, it would fit today.
Sure.
And that's what's interesting about Terry's image and likeness. But it is. I don't think about, I mean, it's quite hard to imagine Terry as a 60-year-old and
yeah,
and what he would be up to now and how he would perceive things at this time, but that is the reality. Is yes, it would have been Terry's 60th birthday in July.
Well, Daryl, it's great to talk to you again, and I wish you continued success as you and your family continue to carry forward Terry's legacy along with millions of Canadians who support you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. All the best. Take care.
That's Daryl Fox from the Terry Fox Foundation. Coming up on next week's show, a woman who completed the 6 World Marathon Majors and finished on her 60th birthday. I hope you can join us then. Happy New Year. Have a great week.